Senator Bernard, Senator Ellis, and myself, Senator Olson. On today's agenda, we have several bills to go in here. We're trying to go ahead and get done before Senate Finance meets, and so with that, we'll get right into we'll get right into 314. We heard this first bill on April 5th, and we'll have a quick, concise presentation, and then we'll see what's happening. Go ahead and identify yourself for the record. And
good morning, Chairman Olson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anna Latham. I'm staff to Representative Kurt Olson. Before you is House Bill 314, which extends Alaska Railroad property lease terms from 55 to 95 years. Longer leases encourage high-value building construction. Quality developments retain their value for a longer period of time and have higher resale value, which is good for the railroad, the state, and for leaseholders. This bill has received widespread support. Municipalities, businesses, and developers throughout the rail belt support this legislation. Thank you for bringing 314 back up today.
Any questions of the bill sponsor? I know we've heard this bill before, so we're not quite as concerned about what's going on. Just the one thing I want to go ahead and ask about is make sure that it's a voluntary 95-year lease as opposed to mandatory.
It is actually, excuse me, Senator Olson is actually at the discretion of the Alaska Railroad Board of Directors, and this would give them the option of extending leases up to 95 years.
With that, any further questions? Nobody's online to testify. What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the bill be reported out of committee with individual recommendations and any accompanying fiscal notes.
Any objection to moving HB 1314 out of committee? Not, the bill moves out of committee.
Thank you.
So here, Captain.
You're welcome.
Next bill we have is HB 9. First heard this bill on April 5th. We're going to introduce the CS, have some committee discussion. With that, give us the update.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm David Scott, staff to Senator Olson. The new CS in front of you is version J. And would you like to move it first?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I move that version J, committee substitute, be considered the item before us.
Any objection to moving version J of HB 9? With that, version J is moved or accepted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'll quickly go through the sectional. And right before I start, Mr. Chairman, what we tried to do in the CS is pare the bill down to the bare minimums that AGDC needs to get to open season and allow them to create a fund so they could start spending the money that was appropriated last year. Section 1 adds a new section to 1856, which is 18 is HFC and relates to AGDC's duties. They are empowered to construct, own, operate, and manage pipelines throughout the state, and it removes any specific reference to the project in the July 1st, 2011 report of AGDC. We had legislation authorization prior to construction. We authorize the AGDC is authorized to acquire land and any other interest in property. Creates the in-state gas pipeline fund, which enables AGDC to use the $200 million appropriated by the legislature in 2011. The shipping commitments resulting from open season shall be reported to both presiding officers and published online within 10 days. Removes authorization to operate as a contract carrier, removes authorization to issue bonds and incur debt. Section 2 adds a new section to 3630, which is the procurement code and exempts ANGDA from state procurement code for professional services. Section 3 amends 3834050A to provide AGDC access to information of state agencies that is directly related to designing, construction, and operating an in-state gas line, and to protect existing confidentiality and information held by state agencies. Section 4 amends 38-34050B, which in current statute directs state agencies to cooperate with and give priority information requests from the Joint In-State Gas Line Development Team. We replace the team with AGDC. Section 5 adds a new section to 38-34050 to allow AGDC to disclose information unless that info discloses particular business or private information. It also specifies that any agreement to sell or manage a pipeline is public information. Section 6 is definitions. Section 7 amends 40-25120A to exempt information covered by AGDC confidentiality agreement from the State Public Records Act. Section 8 amends 41-41010A to enable ANGDA to act as a gas marketer instead of a transporter, and it removes authorization for ANGDA to design, construct, or operate pipelines. Section 9 amends 41-41010D to clarify that ANGDA is a gas marketer. Section 10 repeals and reenacts 41-40020 to state that AHSC's board is now the board of ANGDA. Section 11 amends 41-41060 to conform to Section 10, which relates to the per diem and travel expenses for the board. Section 12 amends 41-41070D to allow ANGDA to contract for legal counsel and exempts that from the state procurement code. Section 13 amends 41-41090B to remove involvement with a project from the circumstances requiring disclosure. It's conforming with Section 8. Section 14 amends 41-41150A to expand ANGDA's existing confidential records authority to include info in a confidential agreement between AGDC and ANGDA. Section 15 amends 41-41200 to remove ANGDA's authority to exercise eminent domain. It conforms with Section 8. Section 16 amends 41-41990 sub 2 to confirm that AHSC's board is the board of ANGDA. It's conforming with Section 10. Section 17 are repealers to conform with restructuring AGDC governance by removing the Joint In-State Gas Line Development Team and removing statutes related to ANGDA board elections. Section 18 repeals Section 1 of the 2002 Ballot Measure 3, which are the findings that are no longer necessary with ANGDA's new and limited authority. Section 19 is immediate effective date.
Any questions by members of the committee on the new CS?
Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Mr. Speaker, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Your thoughts and ideas on the new CS.
Mr. Chairman, I haven't had the time or the opportunity to participate in the process here. Mr. Chairman, I will just talk about a couple of issues and what I see that this CS does. Mr. Chairman, what the CS does is basically gut AGDC's ability to move forward on an in-state gas pipeline project. It takes away a number of things that, in a quick preliminary, that AGDC has talked about, is that they feel it eliminates their ability to move forward with a pipeline and replaces it with requiring sanctioning by the legislature through another law. Mr. Chairman, just a little bit of history on House Bill 9. House Bill 9 is a product of a bill we passed a number of years ago, 2 years ago as a matter of fact, of House Bill 369. And 369 was the vision that what we needed to do to move a gas line forward in the state of Alaska is to take politics out. And what this CS does, Mr. Chairman, is put politics right back in the middle of a gas pipeline project. As you well know, the definition of insanity is doing the same things time and time again and ending up with the same result and expecting a different result. So, Mr. Chairman, where we had a pipeline group working for the citizens of Alaska, moving a pipeline forward, that is the only pipeline project in the state that is moving forward at this time. We have an act pretty actively just neutered it, Mr. Chairman. I don't want the committee members here or the chairman himself to take any of my comments personally because they're not meant to be personal. But what I'll tell you, Mr. Chairman, and this will be my final statement, is that the citizens of Alaska are right. Citizens of Alaska were polled just here recently again on what they thought was the reason that we don't have a pipeline. And their answer to that question, Mr. Chairman, was a lack of leadership and vision and courage in the state. And I think once again, Mr. Chairman, what we've done with this CS is taken neutered AGDC's ability to actually get us to a meaningful open season in the quickest amount of time. And so, Mr. Chairman, those are my comments as far as the CS, and while I appreciate the ability of the committee and the committee process to move the process forward, at this time I don't support the CS that's been proposed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have any questions by members of the committee? Bill sponsor. Now, one of the questions that I have, you talked about the sanctioning of the legislature now required. Is that one of your major reasons that you have issue here? Because if they were asking for more money, why wouldn't it be necessary that the legislature stays engaged so it's a go-no-go situation so we don't get into a cost overrun situation that is pretty significant?
Mr. Chairman, for your record-keeping purposes, with your permission, Representative Mike Hawker, District 32, Anchorage, I've been the active co-sponsor of this legislation, and sometime along the way, I would appreciate the opportunity to address the CS as well. But in answer to your question, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the inherent in the structure of the original bill, not the CS as it's established before us, but the original bill structure, AGDC had been established to provide in a mechanism that provided the state of Alaska the greatest and strongest option, a seat at the table in all possible gas line development proposals. It may well have been a project that required state participation. It may well have been a project that required no state participation, where we simply facilitated a project that allowed commercial interests to work. We all know that no one can appropriate funds under the Alaska State Constitution other than the state legislature. So inherent in the previous legislation was the underlying constitutional principle that if a project required state investment, it would have to come back before the legislature for appropriation. That was a given. But as far as sanctioning a project with AGDC's involvement, help, or financing, it seemed inappropriate to us to require that a potential project done by the commercial sector, the private sector in the state of Alaska, have to come back before us for sanctioning. So there was a very strong inherent sanctioning concept built into the original document, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions of the response to the question by Representative Hawkins? If not, go ahead with your comments on your view of what your take is on the new CS that's there.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I very sincerely appreciate the opportunity, members of the committee. I did want to also echo the sentiments and concerns of Speaker Chenault. Mr. Chairman, when the CS was introduced today, the statement was that the CS was intended to reduce the bill, take content out of it, and leave, and I believe the statement was, the minimum needed to get to an open season, to move a project forward. Minimum needed. And respectfully, Mr. Chairman, I believe that the CS before us is well below the minimums needed to get to an open season. We could... With what's left there, the CS has taken out critical elements that provide the state a strong seat, the ability to lead to a strong open season. Open seasons can have all colors. You can have an open season, but frankly, under this bill, any open season would be at best a farce. This bill absolutely does not give the state, the AGDC, the resources and tools it needs to move forward to a strong open season where we can go toe-to-toe with Alaska's largest producers in moving towards an aligned natural gas pipeline. As the bill is structured, and with all respect, Mr. Chairman, I fear one of the things with the original AGDC concept was that it merged the voter-mandated ANGDA with AGDC. It had ANGDA as a entity that would get Alaska's gas, empowered to get Alaska's gas to market, but an AGDC who was empowered to work the project that would allow ANGDA to get that gas to market. And as this CS is introduced, sir, I really believe that it thwarts the will of Alaska's voters by taking away any possibility of a project coming to fruition under this bill.
Any questions of Representative Hocke by members of the committee? Well, the only question I have is that the committee substitute, I think, was done in cooperation with at least one of your offices. Isn't that correct?
That is incorrect, sir.
That is incorrect.
Yes.
Would you put that on the record?
That is incorrect, Mr. Chairman. We, Mr. Chairman, just for the record, we have supplied your office with the information that we have available to us, but our office certainly didn't sit down and craft this bill with anyone from your office, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
With that, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon, or this morning. We'll set this bill aside. The next bill we have is HB 264.
Excuse me, if we have a brief at ease.
Let's get an at ease here. We're going to go ahead and recess to the call of the chair.
We're in recess.
And welcome to the reconvening of Committee on Regional Affairs. We're only going to be hearing one bill this afternoon. That's 264, which is the property tax bill by Representative Mignola. With that, we'd like to go ahead and is anybody from Representative Mignola's office want to go ahead and present a portion of the bill? Otherwise, we're going to go ahead and move the CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we're ready for you to do what you need to do.
Okay. Senator Kukish.
Is it a backflash? What's backflash?
Oh, for him. Echo.
Okay, I got it. Mr. Chairman, I'll move that Senate CS for House Bill number 264 / E.
Any objection to adopting committee substitute for House Bill 264 / E? Not the committee substitute. So, go ahead. Mr. Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm David Scott, staff to Senator Olson. The CS adds two sections, Section 2 and Section 3, to the bill. In effect, it removes the statutory municipal operating tax cap. It's the net effect of the CS.
At this time, we'll open up committee after public testimony. First, we have Mr. Randy Hoffbeck. Mr. Hoffbeck, come up and identify yourself for the record and go to your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Randy Hoffbeck. I am the Chief of Staff for Mayor Brower of the North Slope Borough. Before I testify, I just want to give just a real brief background for my credentials to speak to this particular amendment. I started in the assessing profession in 1983 with the Municipality of Anchorage, was the Municipality of Anchorage's residential appraisal supervisor for 9 years. After that, I was hired by the North Slope Borough to implement an audit program on oil and gas property, as well as to manage their local taxation, was the tax manager for the North Slope Borough until 1999. At that point in time, I opened a consulting firm, and myself, along with several other members, had the contract to do oil and gas assessment support for the state assessor. Shortly after the contract, about 2 years after having that contract, I was hired as the state petroleum property assessor. I served in that position for 5 years until being hired by the North Slope Borough to be their chief financial officer. And then when Mayor Brower was elected in November, I was named chief of staff for the North Slope Borough. So I've been dealing with property tax issues for almost 30 years, probably about a third of the time dealing exclusively with local property taxes, about a third of the time with oil and gas property taxes, and about a third of the time with both together. So that's my background. In addition, the last major rewrite of the regulations on AS 4356, the oil and gas property tax, I was the primary author of that regulatory rewrite. With that, I want to discuss a little bit the amendment that's before you today within the CS.
With all due respect, it's not an amendment, it's a committee substitute.
I'm not sure of all the terminology, but for the committee substitute. And an overview of the removal of the statutory operating property tax cap. The cap resides in two places. It resides in AS 2945, which is the local property taxes. It also resides in AS 4356, which is the oil and gas property taxes. And essentially what this tax, this cap says, is that no jurisdiction within the state of Alaska can have an assessed value, total assessed value of all properties that exceeds 225% of the statewide per capita assessed value. Simple calculation, you take the total assessed value within the state of Alaska, divide it by the total population of the state of Alaska, multiply that by 225%, and then multiply it times the population of your local jurisdiction. And the cap says that's the maximum assessed value you can have for purposes of funding operations. There's a provision in that also though says that there is no cap for purposes of repayment of general obligation debt. And so essentially what this cap has done is said that when you collect taxes, you can collect a certain amount of money that you can use for operations and a certain amount of money that can be used to repay general obligation debt. The cap only has affected historically long-term Valdez in the North Slope Borough. The cap was put into the statutes late in the process in developing the oil and gas tax laws back in the 70s. It was put in place because there was concern that the pipeline corridor communities would have an inordinate amount of the assessed value within the state of Alaska. They would be newly formed boroughs, and there was concern of how the money would be spent. So they wanted to limit how much could be used for operations. Since that period of time, of course, the state has grown dramatically. There is not an inordinate amount of money focused within the corridor. All of the state has grown dramatically. And the boroughs essentially are 40 years old now and have very mature fiscal policies and fiscal regimes in place. The cap essentially does not limit how much tax can be collected at this point in time. All it does is limit how the money can be spent. So what we're asking for in the removal of this cap is to allow greater flexibility for the North Slope Borough and Valdez primarily, although it has affected other communities in the past. I believe it affected Unalaska at one point in time because of canneries. And I think it also affected Bristol Bay at one point in time because of the high proportion of value within the canneries and a relatively small population. And I believe it hit Skagway at one point in time because of port facilities. Most likely it's going to affect Unalaska again here within the next year or two because the majority of the properties that are going to be staged for OCS exploration and development will be staged in Unalaska. And again, they will have a large assessed value base and a relatively small population will probably trip this cap. So what we're trying to accomplish with this is that the currently the borough collects about, North Slope Borough collects about 9 to 9.5 mils for purposes of operation under the cap. It collects about 9 to 9.5 mils for purposes of repaying bonded debt. Nobody's here crying poverty. The North Slope Borough has a good cash flow. What we're saying is that we could use that cash flow much more efficiently if we didn't have to cycle it through the bond market in order to be able to collect the taxes. Right now, the borough has $480 million in outstanding general obligation debt. At one point in time, we had about $1.4 billion. We paid it down dramatically. All of that debt is scheduled right now to pay off in the next 9.5 years, the majority of it in the next 5 years. That debt was accrued basically to fund large-scale capital programs to bring water, sewer, schools, power to the villages. That particular phase of the borough is complete. There may be some additional water sewer extensions as village grows and things like that, but essentially that large major capital program is complete. But of course, with all those capital investments now comes maintenance. And we have two ways to fund that maintenance. We actually just completed a 6-year plan looking at long-term maintenance issues. We've identified $600 million in deferred and scheduled maintenance over the next 5 years. We don't have enough money to do all of that, but the idea is we can either fund that by going back to the market and selling bonds and doing those capital maintenance projects, or we can pay as we go using operating funds if this cap didn't exist. That $480 million, when we pay it back, we're going to pay $140 million in interest. As far as I'm concerned, that's money that's wasted. If this cap didn't exist, that interest would not be being paid out. That would be money that could be used for projects within the communities. And essentially, the only entities that will be affected by the removal of this cap is the New York bankers and investors. And that we won't be cycling through the bond market again. It's a zero-sum game for everybody else. Nothing within this particular language changes any obligation, any tax obligation for the oil and gas industry. There's a 20-mil limit within the statutes. That 20-mil limit stays. This will not change any taxes that the oil and gas industry has to pay. It will not change any money that flows to the state of Alaska. The state of Alaska gets the way the statute's set up. There's a 20-mil tax levy on oil and gas property statewide. That's the ceiling for it. That is paid to the state of Alaska. The state, however, industry gets to use any money that they pay in taxes to a local jurisdiction as a credit against what they pay the state. So, for instance, in the North Slope Borough, our mill rate's 18.5. Historically, it's always hovered around 18.5 mils. So they get to take the monies that they pay under the 18.5 mils to North Slope Borough and use as a credit against the 20-mil statewide tax. Nothing about that's going to change. That other 1.5 mil still goes to the state of Alaska because it wasn't taken as a credit against the industry. Nothing about this will change that whatsoever. The borough won't get a dime more in tax revenues than it currently does. All we will have is more flexibility to use the money more efficiently and actually provide long-term stability to the borough's financing, because right now our tax base is not being dictated by the assets within the borough, but by the population of the borough. And so as oil field workers fluctuate up and down, our tax base fluctuates up and down. It makes it very difficult for long-term fiscal planning. We're not asking for an advantage that any other jurisdiction doesn't have. We're simply asking for this to be removed and put us on par with Anchorage and Fairbanks and everybody else that doesn't fall under this cap and doesn't have to deal with some of these provisions.
I think we've got a question for Senator White.
Yes.
Yeah, can you give me a 30-second statement telling me why industry will feel, or how industry should feel comfortable with this amendment?
I think there's two things. One, it doesn't change the 20-mil cap, and so there is no additional liability fund. The second one, it does not change the fact that the State Department of Revenue is still the assessing authority for valuing the properties. The borough doesn't have the authority to value the properties. It still resides within the Department of Revenue. We are not taking on any new responsibilities or authority to the borough.
Thank you.
Can you, Mr. Hoffbeck?
I think I've pretty well covered the majority of the topics. There's been several questions that have been floating around that I thought maybe it'd be a good idea to address. One of them was the concern that we've already talked about, and that's the 20 mil cap, and that that is nothing changes concerning the 20 mil cap. Another one was the idea that the of the state's authority to tax. Nothing is changing the state's authority to tax. Another question that came around was, would this affect any other communities, adverse effect on any other communities? A question raised by the Department of Revenue. It's a good question. We asked AML to send out a statewide request to all of the communities within the state and asking whether this would have any adverse effect, the removal of this tax cap. Nobody identified any adverse effect to their communities whatsoever. We got responses back from Juneau said this is good fiscal policy. This is a good idea. This is good fiscal policy. Unalaska, recognizing that they are likely facing this in the near future, was thought that this was a good idea. Macon Penn said, doesn't affect us. Fairbanks said, doesn't affect us. Kenai said, it doesn't affect us. We did get a response from Anchorage that came in just right before this committee hearing, probably 15 minutes ago, that said we'd like a little more information on it. We don't see where it affects us, but the idea that it's a zero-sum game, we need some explanation because it seems like why would we be doing this if it was a zero-sum game? Well, the reality is it's a zero-sum game for everybody but the New York bankers who lose in the process, but there is no additional revenues flowing to any jurisdiction and no liability to the industry.
Senator Wagner.
Are we going to give the New York bankers a heartburn?
Are we going to give them heartburn? I don't.
$40 million worth.
You know, that's not like. I'm not too concerned about that.
Thank you.
Any other questions by members of the committee for Mr. Hoffbeck? If not, we have two people online. Joanna Bales from the Department of Revenue. Ms. Bales, are you on, ma'am?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
You're coming in loud and clear. Go ahead with the testimony.
This is Joanna Bales, Deputy Director of the Tax Division, and I have with me Jim Greeley, the State Petroleum Property Assessor. I mean, at this time, the Department of Revenue opposes this amendment for various reasons. The first is that we don't feel that we've had adequate time to fully vet this, and we would like to have discussions with other municipalities that could be affected by this amendment. One of the other things is we wanted the ability to look at reasons behind the original legislative intent when the tax cap was originally put in place. Mr. Hoffbeck mentioned a couple of things as far as that the state tax revenue would not be affected, and we disagree with that. Historically, after all credits have been claimed against the state petroleum property tax revenue, the state has retained approximately $115 million each year. If this tax cap were to be removed, all municipalities could increase their tax rate to a minimum, well, of 20 mils, which would then erode the entire state's $115 million that it has historically collected, which has gone into the general fund. In addition, the current tax rate that municipalities actually can levy is 30 mils, and by removing the tax cap, there is a potential that if any municipality increased their tax above their tax rate above 20 mils, that they could actually erode the petroleum property tax that some other municipalities are currently collecting. So these are just some concerns, some potential unintended consequences of this amendment that we would like to fully vet with each of the municipalities that is specifically could be affected in their petroleum property tax revenues that they currently collect. So, like I said, at this time, we do oppose this amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I'd like to respond to the Department of Revenue's concerns. We had discussions with the Department of Revenue on Tuesday. They voiced a similar set of concerns. In follow-up to that, we did meet with the governor's staff and went through the concerns that Revenue had presented and explained to them why those concerns are unfounded. But let me step through them real quickly. First of all, the best that we could, there was no indication that this would adversely affect any community, but we did take the step of soliciting responses from communities and got the exact same response that we thought, that there would not be adverse effects to this, because quite frankly, the cap just can only hit a community that has a certain relationship between the population and the tax base. As far as whether the removal of this cap would erode the state's tax base, the reality is that there's nothing that we can do right now. There's nothing that we could do under the removal of the tax cap that we couldn't do right now. All we would have to do is simply sell more bonds, and we could do exactly what Ms. Bales is saying that we would do if this cap wasn't in place. The reality is that would be bad fiscal policy on our part. There's a reason that the borough has stayed at 18.5 mils for 40 years. We've rarely exceeded 18.5 mils, and we've never gotten more than just a little bit over 19 mils, and that was only in 2 years. 18.5 mils is important for our long-term fiscal stability. First of all, if we took all of the money, that just creates a situation where we make ourselves vulnerable to additional legislation that would restrict our ability to tax. And so we've always felt it was important to leave some money on the table, and right now it's about $20 million that we leave on the table each year by staying at 18.5 mils instead of going to the full 20 mils. Secondly, and probably more important, is that 18.5 mils is critical to the bond rating agencies when we go to sell bonds. But that extra mil and a half gives us that flexibility that if for some reason our forecasted assessed values over the life of the bonds doesn't come in the way that we expected it to, we've got the ability to raise additional revenue under the 20 mils without tapping into any other jurisdictions or the state's share of the property tax. The reality is if we went to 20 mils, the state would still have the majority of their property tax in place. It would not take the $115 million away, because the majority of their property tax is in the unincorporated areas that there is no local jurisdiction on. If the bill went from 18.5 to 20 mils, it would move about $20 million, not $115 million. And the bill has always considered the 20 mil cap a hard cap as far as our forecasting. When we forecast repayment of our bonds, we forecast it as multiples against a 20 mil maximum levy, not against a 30 mil levy. For us to go to the 30 mil and start taking money out of other portions of the state, again, would just set us up for major legislation, I think, to limit our taxing authority. Secondly, it's never been tested whether that's actually legal to do or not, although Commerce believes that is a possibility. Third, we could do it right now if we wanted to do it. We choose not to because it's not in our best interest to do so now, and it won't. And fourth, the reality is that if this passes and we relieve ourselves of this debt burden, the pressure on our assessed value is going on our mill rates is down, not up. If we don't need to be spending 20 or 30 or $40 million a year paying back interest, that allows us some flexibility to reduce our mill rate. Doesn't give us incentive to increase our mill rate. And I guess the final point is that the couple of years that we hit 19 mils, we about had a tax revolt on the North Slope. We couldn't go to 20, 21, 25, or 30 mils without having a major revolt by our local taxpayers. They have to pay the same rate as everybody else. So the reality is the mill rates are probably going to stay about where they are right now. But if they move one direction or the other, it's much more likely they're going to go down than up.
We have one more person on the public testimony list. That's Mr. Jim Greeley. Mr. Greeley, are you on, sir?
Before you start.
Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Wade.
Ms. Bales, are you still on?
Yep. Yes, I am.
Why hasn't revenue done a fiscal note at this time on this amendment, on this CS, or are you doing one?
For the chair, Senator Wagner, I actually am working on one right now. We just heard about this amendment coming to this bill a few hours ago, and we did have, as Mr. Hosbeck, some discussions with him, and we still disagree with the North Slope Borough and are concerned that we have not vetted this properly and would like to have discussions with the other municipalities that we believe could be affected by this legislation.
Follow-up, Senator Wagner.
No, sooner than later is all I say, please.
Sure. The next one is we have Mr. Jim Greeley. Mr. Greeley, are you on, sir?
I'm available for questions. If anybody has questions, I'm available. Just handling the bulk of the testimony for the Department of Revenue.
Okay. Any other questions, Mr. Hoffbeck, or other members of the committee? If not, we'll close public testimony to this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Munoz is up on the scene and he's closing comments before we take the role of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Christopher Clark, Chief of Staff for Representative Kathy Munoz. Regarding version E, we are supportive of the language from page 1, all page 1, up to line 12 on page 2, and we share the same concerns that the Department of Revenue has regarding the rest of the language. And, yes, sir.
I'm sorry, Senator Wagner.
Before we have a motion, the reason I ask about a fiscal note, if we get a fiscal note with this, this goes to... No, not now. Right now, this goes to rules after we're done. Is that right?
Yes.
So if it gets a fiscal note in rules, then it probably go to finance. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at my rules chairman here.
That would be correct.
Is that right? Okay. All right.
Sorry, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move that. Ask that Senate CS for House Bill number 264, /E, be moved to the next committee referral of the test. Fiscal note or notes with fiscal note, but individual recommendations.
Any objection to moving the bill out of committee? Not the bill moves out of committee. With that, we're adjourned.
No.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
We're recessed. Call of the chair.